You're listening to South Florida's Good News Station, WCNO Palm City.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA, and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Martech program, Joe Martech.
So I'm supposed to start talking now because Pastor Dave, not only did you point at me, you flashed the on-air sign up there.
I did.
I've got a lady that lives in Palm City. She says, Joe, I'd like to come by and can I come by and check on the station? I said, of course you can. She goes, but you won't put me on the air, will you? And I said, you want me to lie or tell you the truth? You know, anybody that's not bright enough to come in and join us on the station is going to get put on the radio because that's just part of the ritual.
Well, it's better than calling in, right? They're right here, personally.
That's it. You know, last year when Mike Paulus's daughter and other scout troops came in and sang Christmas carols during just before Christmas, and it was kind of cute because the girls were all like 9-10 years old, and you know, they're a bit timid to start with, so I made them do them twice. So the second time I want some gusto,
I know Vince Rizzino is here at WCNO, but he's out in the lobby talking with Tom Creighton. They must be having a real discussion.
What happens is Vince has really become a Bible study.
Yes.
So what he is constantly challenging Pastor Tom on phraseology in the Bible. Now, Dave, you're akin to that too, but you don't get quite as worked up as Tom does.
We're just different approaches to
different
the same
approaches,
topic.
Right? Yeah, right. So I think what's happening with Vince, they're back into it again, and Tom will go and bring up 9 or 10 verses, and Vince will have a counter to most of them or some of them, and then, having a whole week to study, he'll come back and say, yes. Now.
See, that's a pastor's dream, though, Joe, to have people that do that.
Somebody challenge.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, my favorite pastor, the one that dunked me back in 82, he was such a dynamic teacher. And when he was holding the service, he does like, and I learned it from him. He'd say, okay, class, pay attention. He said, now open up, we're going to do this chapter, and we're going to pick it apart, and we're going to decipher it, and it was written in Greek, and here's what the Greek said, and sometimes these words can change to this and to that, so we're going to pick it apart. Yeah. And he kept everybody, he held their attention. You know, mm-hmm. when you got 600 or 800 people sitting out there, holding that many people's attention is tough.
That's right.
Of course, we had the nursery to get rid of all the kids, and the teenagers were put up front so that they couldn't hide.
That must have been tough for them.
That was kind of tough. Yeah. One, all right, class, this is important now. You have to write this phone number down unless you're driving. Don't write it down if you're driving, but if you're home, you write this down, you keep it next to your phone. 1-888-221-8990. 888-221-8990. I am Joe Martech. This is the Team Martech Hour. Starting back in around 2004, Joe Martech, financial advisor, Greg Fasula, attorney, Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, started doing radio shows. And the concept was very simple. Each one of us had a number of clients. I had clients in as many as 13 states, all over the state of Florida. And literally, they'd ask me questions that I didn't have the answers to. And the two main areas were insurance at the time, especially automobile and homeowners insurance. And the next one was when I meet a new suspect or prospect, I talk wills and trusts because I think the cart and the horse should be put in a proper order. So if people don't have one, I normally stir the pot a little bit and try to get that horse and cart organized. Now, this week, on our morning show this morning, WPSL 1590 AM. Did you straighten him out yet?
No, I was waiting. You said he was on the air today. My Joanne called to say that they could overhear my entire conversation out there on the air.
No kidding.
I said, really?
Well, this is good.
So it's all right.
Did, did she like it? Was it good?
No.
Anyway, so I had a client this today, a prospect that was. We got into car insurance a bit.
Oh, okay.
And I thought this is a good subject. Now, if Dan was here, it would help. But Alan Love here is a guest member today. Vince Rizzino, CPA, is here today. Other members of the team abandoned us, meaning Dan Warren's not here, Greg Fasula's not here, Victoria Lloyd Remax of Stewart's not here, Mike Paulus, whose own office is six blocks away, is not here. I want him to feel guilty, of course. Because
of course.
He should
but
be.
You know, the thing is, he's probably not listening to us, right?
That helps a lot. It's hard to make somebody feel guilty when they're not listening, right? It's like talking to a teenager, right? You said what?
Well, the show is recorded.
You could send him a copy of the
tape. Yeah. That doesn't mean he'll listen to it, though. But yeah. Anyway, so the subject this week, I was down visiting this one particular couple. And normally what I try to do when I'm talking money is to say, hey, what's our goal and what are we trying to accomplish, and how much money are we talking about and what do we want to do with it? Well, so they have two piles of money, his and hers. Now,
how old is this couple?
Well, they're not young, but here comes the problem. A part of it, it's her IRA 401k, which can only be in one name. You can't have joint owners on an IRA or 401k. You can have beneficiaries, but you can't have joint owners. At least I've never seen that. Nobody ever been able to do it, but that's, I think, the rule. He has, in the meantime, a large sum of money, $500,000, sitting in the bank. So he's got car insurance with very large liability limits, $250,000, $500,000, which is almost adequate for that amount of money to be protected. And I say almost because an umbrella might be a smart thing, because when an attorney finds out how much money you've got, they're very happy, because when they sue, they're going to sue for eight times as much as they think they can collect. Or maybe 10 times.
But
okay.
That's how they earn their keep.
Of course. So the question was this. That's what he had. She had 2040 on her policy. And I said, boy, oh boy, this is a terrible thing, because that's joint money. You go out with your car and you have a car accident, run somebody over. And when an attorney finds out your husband's got $500,000, you got $20,000 worth of coverage. The insurance company says, here's the 20, goodbye.
Yeah.
And then now you have to go hire your own attorney and defend yourself. And this could be a fortune in just attorney's fees. And all of his money was at risk. Now, if it wasn't in both of their names, there becomes a better thing to have happen. But the fact that it was joint means his is hers, hers is his. So
and
when it comes
the policy,
to
policy, the policy was in both names?
No, they had an individual car insurance, but it makes no difference. If her liability limits were lower than his, the insurance companies could care less what he's got.
Who owns the car?
Well, here comes the other side of the coin. If the car is insured, if I drive your car, your insurance is primary. You drive my car, my insurance is primary. Your insurance might pick up the slack under certain circumstances, but the reality is this. When I look at somebody that works their whole life, and they've accumulated something, and to save $200 or $300 a year is not always the smartest thing to do. You need to protect it. So I suggested strongly that they get back to their insurance agent and increase her limits to the same as him.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Then we got into the subject in this today with uninsured motorist. And a fellow actually called in and said, hey, listen, my agent said I may not need uninsured motorists because my homestead is exempt from attachment by creditors, which is true in Florida. I have an IRA, which is exempt. I have a 401k, which is exempt. And I threw in, if you have annuities, they're exempt from attachment by creditors. Those instruments are. So the question to Dan was, why should I have uninsured motorists? He says, well, your medical insurance, he said, I'm on Medicare and I've got a supplement. I'm covered. Dan says, all of that's true except for one little minor thing. Let's assume you go into this accident and you get hurt in the accident. You go in a hospital and your insurance company pays for that. But let's say you lost a limb or you're permanently disabled. Ain't no money. But the uninsured motorist fund would pay.
Now, why is it disqualified or exempt
under the disability? Why wouldn't they cover it if you're just saying
your insurance?
The insurance company.
Well, your health insurance doesn't cover you for...
Oh, not if you're dead or if you're disabled, of course.
No. Well, that's what I just said. So his health...
I was wondering where you were going with that. I just wasn't sure what you were
His health about. Insurance is not going to pay for long-term disability or for limb loss or for death or anything, but the uninsured motorist phrase not only will pay for the medical expenses, but it will also pay for... other forms of it that your health insurance wouldn't pay.
So you're saying that it not only covers you for uninsured motorists, but also covers these health things.
Well, the health benefits covered by his health insurance is what he was saying. He's got Medicare and a supplement. He's covered.
Right, but...
why should I have uninsured motorist coverage? This uninsured motorist hits me. My health insurance pays for my medical procedures, but it doesn't pay me for... loss of a limb. It doesn't pay me for loss of hearing. It doesn't pay me
for
loss.
Well, that's where you're right. That's where I guess a disability policy would
come
in. Right.
You can look at uninsured motorists as a disability coverage.
But you're saying that this uninsured motorist would cover him for disability.
The uninsured motorist has benefits to cover you under these type of losses.
Okay. That's probably most people don't know it. I didn't know that.
Well, yeah, I'm explaining this to you.
It sounds more like it's an umbrella policy.
Well, but it's not. The key is an umbrella can fit over the top of that, but normally an umbrella is strictly for liability. It's not normally for disability or anything. That's a separate thing. But the key was this. Yes, this man did not need uninsured motorist under the circumstances he brought up, but the circumstances he didn't bring up is what if you lost a limb? What if you were permanently disabled? What if you had permanent injuries or permanent disabilities? That uninsured motorist money is available to compensate you for these kind of losses. Whereas your health insurance will take care of you while you're in the hospital or that kind of stuff.
Well, rather than an umbrella, it's more like a niche policy. It covers you
more
for,
like a disability policy because
that's the niche.
That's the niche because the niche. It's not a health issue and you didn't die.
No.
It's the worst case. You're living with a disability.
You're living with a disability, and let's say you lost a limb or an eye or an ear. Who cares what it is? There's value to each body part.
Yeah.
So this uninsured motorist all of a sudden took on a new wrinkle, which I learned today. Mm-hmm. And this fellow that called in, he learned today. I said, now your agent didn't lie to you that, yes, those certain things were exempt, but the uninsured motorist coverage does more than just give you medical. It takes care of certain long-term, there's money available as awarding, like if you're going to court suing an insurance company that's got liability coverage and they ran you over with a car and you're going to sue them for $8 million and you've got enough coverage, you can collect if you have these permanent problems. Anyway, so what I would very much caution people on is when they start talking about uninsured motorists, because Florida happens to be one of the main states that has major uninsured motorist problems.
Mm-hmm.
That sometimes that extra $100 or $200 a year that you're trying to save may not be the smartest thing to do.
And keep in mind that many people who do not have insurance are also what they call judgment proof, in that they have no resources.
Well, here, let's go to that part. Now, that was the next thing that came up, and I got a kick out of this. Mm-hmm. So here comes this young guy in. He says, all I want is the minimum insurance that I can get by him. Okay, no problem. I can write you the minimum insurance. I'm talking for Dan now. Mm-hmm. He said, question, are you working? Yeah. You think you're going to keep working? Oh, sure. You don't have anything now? Do you think you ever will have anything? He said, well, what do you mean? Well, if you work for 20 years or 30 years, do you think you will accumulate anything, like money, other than your primary residence, which can be exempt because it's a homestead? Do you think you might, maybe you might inherit? What if a relative dies and leaves you $100,000, $200,000? Pick a number. Is that any of that possible? Now, most young people would think about that for 8 seconds and say, sure, especially in today's marketplace. Mm-hmm. Old people are dying and leaving their kids all the time. Well, in Florida, let's say he had this accident and he got a judgment on him for $100,000, $200,000, $300 in court because there was no money to pay it. Well, judgments in Florida are good for 21 years. And at the end of 21 years, the people that got the judgment can renew it.
Right.
So literally, you could be 20 years old, and when you're 40 years old, you could be substantial, and you inherit money, and you could lose it.
Yeah.
So point I'm trying to say, folks, is part of the counseling that we try to provide in this show is to teach people to be aware of certain things, and if you have young people in your family, that, you know, when you're young, you're sacrosanct, nothing's going to happen, nothing goes wrong, and what have I got to lose? Nothing. But all of a sudden, if you straighten out, start flying right, and you get married and you have children, all of a sudden the whole picture changes. And if you haven't noticed, most of us, if we don't die, that's what happens. We get married and we have kids, and women beat us in the head and straighten us right out.
So it's no different. Is it simple just to protect yourself then, that as you accumulate things, you just increase the policy limits?
Well, the point is yes, but here comes the situation that we're looking at. That let's say you get a judgment today, okay, for $100,000, okay, and all you've got is $10,000 worth of coverage, and now you go increase your limit tomorrow. They don't care about what happened today. They're not going to pay that. I mean, it's like having a car accident and going out and buy insurance the next day and trying to put a claim in. Forget it. You know, you've got to have that coverage at that time in order to cover it, even if the claim doesn't affect you for 10 or 20 years. Because let me tell you what, insurance companies aren't going to pay without looking back.
Right.
Depends on the type of policy.
Well, think about this logically now. Now, I have never, ever seen an insurance company back pay for a claim that wasn't insured.
Depends if it's an occurrence policy or a claims made policy.
Who, what?
There's two types of policies. There's a claims made or an occurrence
policy. Well, explain that, because I haven't heard that.
In the occurrence policies, if you had coverage in the year that the claim originated,
right,
you're covered.
Right.
But if you're claims made, if you don't, in other words, it could happen 10 years from now. If the incident happened under the year that you had your coverage,
right,
you're covered.
I know that. That's what I just said.
But claims made doesn't work that way. If I have a claims made policy this year and I don't have a claim against me, but then I don't renew the policy, somebody puts a claim against me next year, or for that matter, for this year, they're not required to pay it if you don't have an active policy.
Okay. Point was, now, under most circumstances, and here I'm not 100% sure, if I have liability policy that covered me during a period of time, any instance that happened during that period of time should be covered, whether I renew the policy years later or
that's
not.
That's an occurrence type policy.
Current. Now, that's the norm. That's the norm. When I used to write the stuff, that was the norm. I wished I had Dan here to say if that's the way it is today. I don't understand what Florida law is today because I'm not up on it. But it doesn't hurt to ask your agent these questions.
And absolutely. Because like in malpractice, it's usually nowadays it's claims made.
Okay.
So that forces you to continue to renew your policy every year. Or if you stop, you've got to buy what's called a tail policy, which means it's essentially, it turns it into an occurrence policy.
Okay.
So that even if somebody, if you did a malfeasance 2 years ago and they're suing you now and you don't have insurance now, well, if you have a tail policy or if you had an occurrence policy, you would be covered.
So go back now. So the company that had me covered during this incident, I no longer have, but I went to another company.
Right.
Well, the new company is not going to cover that. The old company is going to.
Depends on when the claim was, what covered that time when the claim,
at that
when
time,
the incident covered at,
okay,
that time.
Okay, man. We're on the same page. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All I'm trying to say is it's your questions that you should be asking your insurance agent when you get insurance, and if your kids are not asking that question, you as a parent should try to advise your kids, hey, look at, yes, I understand 10, 20, and you only want to pay $100 a year for insurance, but the bottom line is we have to look at the future, because your whole future can be adversely affected tremendously if you make a mistake now, and now you're going to pay for it for 40 years. So,
well, and the claims made is that point is exactly that, Joe. It's when the claim is made.
Right.
So you better have insurance
during that day.
During that day when, yeah, that claim is put in. Right.
That's my point.
If you don't have insurance, you had only a claims made policy, you're SOL. But if you had an occurrence policy, then a different story.
Anyway,
then it goes back to the incident, not to when the claim went in, but rather when the incident occurred.
You have to be insured when the incident occurred, yeah, period. I mean, that's just the way the system is. Yeah. So literally, if I only had $10,000 worth of coverage when the incident occurred and it was $1 million claim, the insurance company says, here's the 10 grand, goodbye, go,
right,
get them.
Exactly.
And that's just,
you better
it,
have your assets protected.
That's, yes, yeah, that's
and
it.
And your point is well taken, Joe, yeah, that it just because you don't have assets enough to worry about it now,
right,
things change.
Well, and you know, literally, when we're 16, 18, it doesn't make it. But as soon as we're 18 and a second, now you're an adult, you're on your own. And I've often counseled parents, hey, when those kids turn 18 that day, you give them that car, take it out of your name and make it their car. Because when they're 17, you're liable. When they're 18 and a second, they're an adult.
Right.
And you,
yeah, as long as the car's in their name, it's
that you're done. You know, you don't have it. So look, literally it's called a take a sigh of relief, because that kid can go run somebody over tomorrow and you're not going to lose everything you've worked your whole life for, because these are things that 99% of the time don't happen, but it always happens to somebody. Mm-hmm. And as we said, if you drive down US-1, every other billboard's got an attorney on it. And if you turn on the tube, every other commercial is either selling a car or it's an attorney.
Right.
Or an attorney.
How come we never see any? Yeah. We don't ever see any commercials for CPAs.
No, you don't. You don't. It's always lawyers and personal injury lawyers.
Yeah, boy, and they're the ones that make. Hey, and the way they make bucks, they sue for big bucks.
Well, it's where the deep pocket money is.
That's it. 1-888-221. Dave, you know what happens is sometimes clients teach us things.
They do.
You know, when I start to think about the things that we take for granted, we don't pay any attention to on a normal basis. But all of a sudden, hey, you know, if we don't die, life can be a long road.
If you don't die?
If you don't die.
Yeah.
Life's a long road.
That's it deep. That's too deep for me.
I thought no, this was heavy duty philosophy here. Oh, you know,
right? Wow.
Yeah, I love that.
If you don't die, life could be long.
When I was a kid living in Detroit, and I think people that listen to this show know my dad was a milkman, and we were living in GI housing, and the one block, there was 100 houses straight down on one side, 100 on the other side. Every house was exactly the same.
And you had tons of friends.
Tons and tons of friends. My best buddy lived across the street, Jewish kid, Doug Berman. So we grew up, you know, when you're a kid, I'm Catholic, he's Jewish. Hey, he came to my holidays, I went to his holidays. I did learn not to like gefilte fish, I'll tell you right now. Never could figure that stuff out, but that's okay.
I never had that. Is it any good?
No.
I have an opinion other than yours, Joe. I think it's very good.
Yeah, but you're Jewish, for Pete's sake. You know, you were raised with this stuff, you see.
Right.
You're not supposed to know any difference.
Matzo ball soup.
You have to acquire a taste for gefilte fish.
Uh-huh. It's like scotch.
Let me just say, no. I acquired a stage without acquiring. But that's okay.
You liked it before you liked it.
I liked it before I liked it. But the key, what we're trying to say is, I mean, isn't gefilte fish jarred carp?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But it depends. It depends.
Pretty much.
It depends the seasoning that you put in the jar.
It changes the nature of the fish.
Well, it's like liver. Okay. As long as you got 9 pounds of onions and 6 pounds of ketchup and 1 ounce of liver, it's okay.
It's delicious.
Yeah, right.
I told you that story.
Under all of the garnishes.
I once sat for 6 hours at the kitchen table because I wouldn't eat liver. My mother prepared it by taking it out of the package and putting it in a frying pan.
And that was the end of it.
And that was it, in the dish.
And did your dad eat it?
He did. He liked it. I didn't like it. She said, you're not going to bed or you're not leaving this table until you eat it. Well, guess what? I didn't eat it.
You didn't.
Yeah. I had this with one of my girls, which was my stubbornest kid. And we had this big, big picture window from the dining room looking out at the neighbor house. And she would not eat. And I said, you're not going to go to bed till you finish that. Well, at 1 o'clock in the morning, my neighbor called me up, said, Joe, let the kid go to sleep. Kid won again. You know, I lost again.
Well, may he rest in peace. My father bailed me out because about 11 o'clock at night, he came down. He says, you're not going to eat that, are you? I said, no. He says, go to bed.
Lucky.
I'll take care of it.
Mom got even with you later, though.
She usually found a way to get even.
And you remember back when we were kids, we didn't have such things. I'm sure they had nursing homes and they had old people houses, but usually grandma moved in with you.
Right.
I mean, you know, that was
a nuclear family.
Yeah, that was how it worked.
Extended family.
So this is my buddy across the street, and grandma was born in Europe, and she didn't speak much English. And she's a widow lady, and she's dressed in black from head to toe every day. Mm. You know, she was wearing the widow costume big time. And there's like 90 kids in the neighborhood. You remember those neighborhoods like you grew up in?
And the baby boomer generation, they had
kids were everywhere.
Kids were everywhere.
So these kids are ripping through the house all the time. You know, and back then, you know, we never walked. we always ran. Everything we did, we ran. So one day, she's always waving her finger and yelling at the kids in some language that none of us understood, and even my buddy didn't understand. But one day, I remember her telling me, and Alan Love, attorney, retired prosecuting attorney, messy Jew, excuse me, messianic. I like messy better, but that's okay. You'll understand this one in a heartbeat. One day, she's yelling at us kids. She goes, and she's very frustrated, just kind of clenching her fist, and she's frustrated, and she says, old people should not be allowed to be born. Made perfect sense to me.
Old people should
not be allowed to be born.
It's called Jewish logic.
Jewish logic, yeah, yeah, right? Yeah. It was so funny. And we all kind of walked around scratching our heads for a good while, but, you know, after we figured out, you know, that she didn't like this being old hanging around all these kids, you know. 1-888-221-8990. Now, let me ask you a question, Vince. So let's say I'm a client of yours, and I get a check in the mail from the IRS that I'm not expecting. Mm-hmm. And it's for a sizable amount of money. Mm-hmm. What should I do?
Deposit it.
I understand that.
And then I would either write or call the IRS, basically. No, tell them I got it. Well, chances are, 99% of the time, they'll get back to you and say, we made a mistake.
Well, here comes the question. Should I deposit that check first, or should I come to you first and say, why did I get this check?
Well, you should check with your accountant first.
Okay.
Because usually you might have forgotten the reasons why you got this check. Seriously.
It should be on the tax return.
You know, you look at it and say you were supposed to get a refund. Now, most of the times I don't get a call like that.
No.
I got a check out of the blue.
Right.
Normally, it's a client was expecting $2,000 and they got $700.
Yeah, right. Different story.
You know, but sometimes it goes the other way.
But on the other hand,
not as many times.
Not that you've ever done this, and I'm sure you haven't, because I know you're nearly perfect.
And no,
you never make mistakes.
There's only one perfect person in the world.
And he was. But he's not walking the earth anymore.
No, but he's there.
Now, when I walked on water,
it was frozen. It was frozen, yeah. Okay, so, yeah, but that's the answer to that.
But here was the question. So what could have happened was a mistake on a tax return, mm-hmm. and the Internal Revenue, when they go through their computer stuff, they oftentimes correct mistakes, in their opinion, and they will send you a notice. Is it possible they would send a check if there was a mistake? If you didn't
they
make
might.
Enough?
It's rarer these days than used to. I used to see it more often. But they can send you a check erroneously.
Okay.
Could have had a one digit off on a Social Security number. Who knows why?
So my point is, let's say it was one digit off on a Social Security and you got the check instead of somebody else. The question is, should I cash it or should I find out first? Because if they cash it and they want it back, you may not have the money to cover it when they want it back. And now they're going to charge you interest, all kinds of good stuff.
Well, again, if it's some kind of a check that you have no idea what it's
for,
I wouldn't. I'd call.
There you go.
If it's a differential amount from what you thought you paid and then you found out later you got a refund because they audited you and figured out that there was
something else
and you got money back, that's a different story.
Yeah.
But if it's just a number and it's a large number and it's out in the blue, I wouldn't deposit
it.
I would
usually
call. You call and say, hey, I got this check.
Don't they usually send you a notice first before the check is issued? Because we had 3 years of tax refunds that just came back to us because of some changes in the tax law benefiting us. And for each check, we got a notice first saying this amount of money is coming to you. Yeah. If you have a problem with it, let us know. So it seemed like that was their modus operandi.
I had the thing that was an absolute dream. I got a check for about $5,000 from Social Security. They said, we calculated your benefit incorrectly.
That's a pleasant surprise.
Mm. Isn't that a pleasant surprise?
I had a woman that happened to, by the way. She was in her 70s.
Yeah.
Her husband died 15 years earlier. And she discovered, I don't know how, Social Security discovered there was a mistake in her calculation. She got a check for about $100,000+ from Social Security.
Well, mine wasn't nearly that grandiose, but I tell you. And then I had my brother says, what are you going to do, Joe? And I says, hey, I'm not calling him, you know, because the key is this. They said they missed the calculation when they calculated my benefit. So they had to pay me back what I hadn't been paid over whatever the period of time was. Mm-hmm. And it was a good amount of period of time. But, you know, that kind of makes you feel good that the Infernal or Social Security is actually auditing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, they do.
That's a good thing.
They're not always trying to rip you off.
No.
In fact, well, most of the times they're not.
Well, they're never trying. The bottom line is it's called what is the right thing to do if it's if they owe you or you owe them. And the norm is we most of us are used to us owing them rather than them owing us. But it does happen.
Yeah, yeah, there are mistakes.
Because I remember when, and I'm sure if you remember this one, we first got Social Security, they actually either called me or, no, they talked to me on the phone and said, we sent you a thing with all the years and this is what you paid. Do you agree with that? Because here's your benefit. They told me on the phone. I said, yeah, I like that. You know, I'm not going to go and recalculate this thing and go back through tax returns to find out what the dollar. I'm assuming they could figure that. But somehow or other, if I had, there was something in there that obviously they missed.
Yeah.
Which, you know, hey, so
it could be either earnings that they hadn't found something in the system somewhere, because yeah. I've had that happen where a client, they had like 10 years worth of earnings, wasn't credited to them. It was someplace else. And they found it eventually and then credited them. And
that makes a monster difference.
It makes a difference in the benefit.
Yeah.
That's why I encourage people, Joe, to look at those statements. Now you can do it online. Actually go in, open up an account on the socialsecurity.gov.
Right.
And get an account and go in there. And then you can see your earnings history. Make sure that you've got earnings in there for every year you worked.
Yeah,
if there are gaps, you need to find out why.
The power of the computer today is phenomenal, what information you can get on your own.
You can even apply for Social Security online.
Yeah, I don't know why.
You can.
I didn't, but they just automatically contacted me.
You could apply for Medicare online.
Yeah.
They even have a middle ground now, and that's what I took, is I went to the office in Fort Pierce.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you can wait 45 minutes to speak to a benefits coordinator, or you can go to that window down there, and our IT guy will take you through our website. And that's what I did.
Yeah. Nice.
And
nice.
I stayed there to answer all my questions. It took me about 20 minutes.
I've had such magnificent experiences with the Social Security office in Port St. Lucie. Normally, if I get a client that's scared and nervous, whether Internal Revenue or Social Security, I'll go with them. Mm-hmm. And we make an appointment always. And they have been bent over backwards to be cooperative and friendly. Mm-hmm. It's like the new government, as opposed to the way it was 30 or 40 years ago, which didn't seem quite as friendly, if I remember right.
Yes.
It was a little bit different. 1-888-221-8990. Now, understand, folks, that our group, not including newly or not so newly retired Alan Love, prosecuting attorney from Wisconsin, who is usually a special guest, has a cumulative of around 200 years of experience. We got Vince Rosino, CPA, not only a regular CPA, a forensic CPA, recognized in the court system as an expert witness. We have Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart, who's been in the real estate business, I think since 1980 or maybe 78, but a long time.
And she's only 30.
And she's only 30, right? And Mike Paulus, mortgage broker, I think he's 25 or 7 years now, 27 years, something like that,
he's
in the mortgage business.
Yeah, 27 years in the business, yeah.
And Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, 38 years. Greg Fasula, he and I, we're guessing, now he's the youngest, well, he and Mike are the youngest guys, but I'm going back to 1992 when I met Greg. We're guessing around 92 because he was not that long an attorney when I started recommending him. So when you add up all of these years of experience, there's just an awful lot on the table here, so we can help people with all kinds of different things. And what we try to do with this show is bring up subjects that we hear that are sometimes out of the ordinary, but if it happens to one person that we find out, I guarantee you there's another 100 that could be listening that might learn something.
Yeah.
And if we can help you avoid a problem, that's what we're here to do. And if we can help straighten out some things, that's also what we're doing, which I'm still working on a couple of cases we've been working on for a few months, trying to get people taken care of properly. And I actually end up giving somebody to Greg because they wouldn't communicate with us anymore. So, you know, we'll let Fasula. I said, Greg, oftentimes these people won't talk to me. I'm not an attorney, quote, but attorneys carry a little bit more clout, that word. And you can chase them down, and if they won't talk to you, you can write them a letter, and oftentimes a letter from an attorney has even more clout. So trying to help people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we've got one in particular that whose son died and had a 401k, and mom is 6 years now. We have no idea how much money it is. They won't tell her. They won't tell us. It could be $50, could be $5,000. We don't know. But it should go to mom. And mom keeps giving up. And I said, no, we'll just keep beating this thing to death until these people finally end up telling us what the story is. And if it's only $50, okay, so be it. It's done. Mm-hmm. But if it's $5,000, it's worth opening an estate, which needs to be done, and then setting up the beneficiary.
That's right. We learned that last week. Yeah. You definitely have to do a court filing.
You have to do the court. But if it's only $50, it's not worth doing a court filing. But we don't know. We don't know that. All we know is the question. We don't know the answer. 1-888-221-8990. We have Vince Rizzino, CPA, Alan Love, guest attorney, Pastor Dave, Pastor Tom is on the phone right now taking a call, and you got Joe Martek, financial advisor. Money.
Ah, money.
Money.
Well, you know, if we notice the world situation today and the political situation today, at best is a little crazy.
And hey, Bitcoin went up to $4,200.
Imagine
crazy.
That.
I mean, this is a cryptocurrency, right?
I mean, it still makes no sense to me, and I can't trade in it, by the way.
You're not allowed, broker-dealer?
No, not allowed. Not allowed to trade in it. It's a very, very unusual thing, but somehow or other it's getting a value that nobody can figure out exactly why or how, and I sure can't. But I know nobody personally that's trading in it, or anybody that owns any of it. But I'm sure there are some people, obviously, it wouldn't be in the value. But one of the things that I was talking to people was, when I look at the overall stock market today, we have in the market what is called a price-to-earnings ratio. Price-to-earnings ratio. So literally the price of a stock, a piece of stock in a company, usually should be 10 times its earnings. So that's what's called a good value. Good value. So if they earn $1 million, they should have $10 million worth of stock out there, and the shares should be corresponding. Well, if all of a sudden this price-to-earnings ratio goes from 10 up to 20, by almost everybody's estimation, the market is at the very least full, but by some estimations, it is overfull. Normally, when we've had crashes in the history, the ratio was closer to 25, between 25 and 30. Now, how it's gauged and how it's calculated is subjective, because not everybody calculates it the same way. Very often it's calculated forward, 6 months to a year, based on guesstimations. But if we use current numbers, usually that number is considerably different than the guesstimation going forward. Because a company that's a publicly traded company is supposed to report their earnings, and they're also supposed to project earnings based on variables. Now, those projections are not guaranteed, but normally...
They don't even project, Joe. They use a term called guidance. You know,
guidance.
They're given guidance.
Yeah.
They're not projections, per se.
There's another statistic that's come into vogue in the last few years regarding earnings, and that's called earnings yield. It's like a dividend yield.
Yep.
In other words, if a company earns $5 a share and is priced at $50, the earnings yield is 10%.
Right.
And the higher the earnings yield, that shows that the company may be undervalued, where if the earnings yield is like 1% or 2%, that may show that the company is way overvalued.
I think that's the inverse of the price-earnings ratio.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's the inverse.
The key is this. That doesn't mean they even pay the dividend, but that they show the earnings. That doesn't mean they don't pay it in a dividend. They keep, like... What is it? Apple, they don't pay a dividend, but they keep billions of dollars.
Right.
You could have what's called earnings per share. They don't have to dividend it out.
No,
they could keep it in there.
They do.
And use it for growth.
But there are so many statistics now. But earnings yield is just the other side of the coin of price earnings ratio.
Yep,
and
yep.
Some people feel it's easier to determine the true value of a company looking at earnings yield versus price earnings ratio, because price earnings ratio has another factor in it that earnings yield doesn't, and that's what industry are you in. A technology company is going to have a higher price earnings ratio but still may be undervalued compared to, say, a utility company.
But yeah, but the calculations are the same. The interpretation will be different based on the industry. Yeah,
like we look at certain companies, and I'll just take a quick example, like Facebook and Amazon and Netflix. Some of these things have PE ratios that are off the wall, way, way high, because these companies, some of them are still not profitable, but they're growing like crazy. And people are buying them like crazy, anticipating that these companies will continue to grow. But where I'm kind of going with, rather than taking a specific company, is just to say that right now, when I look at most clients, unless they're young, you got a longer window to look forward to. But if you're in your 50s, 60s, 70s, most people are not as much into gambling or looking 20 and 30 and 40 years out. Like, I had a fellow come into the office a few months ago, sat down with me, and he said, a year ago I had $1.4 million, now I've only got $1 million. And my broker says, hey, give me some time, I'll get it back. And he says, I'm 80. How much time do you think I've got? Well, you know, and that's exactly the truth. Now, if you're 40, okay, fine. Yeah. In theory,
the horizon is you're certainly and, different.
Unless you get run over by a truck. You've got 20 or 30 or
an uninsured motorist.
That too.
Without insurance. Right. Without insurance.
If you survive that, you could really get some.
So the concept that we're looking at, that I look at most people today, and especially if they're not too young, is to get satisfied with a 5 or 6% yield. Now, you're going to get a half a point or a point in the bank, but there are instruments that are paying 5 and 6%. And all I try to do with people is say, hey, look, you can always take risk. You can always take risk. But if you get into something that is giving you something that's maybe not exorbitant, but it's 5 or 6%, and you're dealing with some what I call very, very, very conservative instruments, hey, down the road, you can take a portion of that and get a little more risky if you want, or you can take a portion of it now and get more risky. But you need to learn, and that's the biggest job that I have, or Vince especially, we try to teach people to get them to understand what their risks are and how what their risk tolerance is and how long a period they've got and what their goal is when it comes out the window.
And then you hope, Joe, that they take your advice after you've given it to them.
There you go. Well, and very often a person, when I say, okay, 5 or 6, they get real happy with that compared to the bank, but then they start getting a little greedy sometimes and say, hey, you got anything pays any better? Well, back again, if you're in your 40s, 50s, that makes more sense. But when you're in your 60s or 70s, it starts to become not the smartest thing in the world to take undue risk. Not that it doesn't sometimes win. Look, I did not buy any Facebook when it came out. Do I regret that? No kidding. Because it took off like a rocket. But I have a hard time wrapping my head around things that don't have any substance. You know, I'm looking at something.
Well, that's intellectual property, so to speak.
Intellectual.
You can't put your finger on it.
You can't.
It's software.
Yeah. Oh, hey, it's that little tiny disc, and it's worth what? 80 million? 800 million? 80 billion? Like it was Tesla, the electric cars.
Oh, yeah.
They're worth more now than General Motors. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, I can. We have what you call irrational exuberance going on.
Well, they had this guy, Kevin O'Leary.
All credit to what's his
Kevin
name?
O'Leary, who's on Shark Tank, and he was on CNBC talking about Tesla. And they said, do you own Tesla? And he says, no. And he said, why not? He says, I have a problem with it. He said, it's my own personal problem. It's got nothing to do with the company. And what's that? He said, they got this big battery in there, and it's underneath where I'm sitting.
Kevin is very good at those real practical insights.
And he said, I just envisioned this thing getting on fire, and I'm sitting on it. he said, I just can't wrap my, I mean, it's the same, it's an emotional
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, because we hear about these batteries on fire with computers and cell phones.
Sure.
Well, you're sitting on a pretty big battery in that car. So
yeah, and you're really on the hot seat.
Pun intended, right?
Joe, one of the things when you have many years of experience in the securities industry and Vince in accounting, say you have a younger person coming into your office and he wants to put a lot of money into, say, something very speculative. He's heard something on TV about making a lot of money in marijuana stock.
Yeah, right.
How How do you dampen down that enthusiasm for risk, where in your heart you know it's not a good idea for this person to generate as much of the money that he wants to put into these stocks?
And this happens quite often, by the way.
So what do you say? What do you do to a young person?
Literally what happens is these are called penny stocks. Now, penny stocks, literally, they are trading at 10, 12 cents a share. When you do penny stocks, I have to have you sign an agreement that basically says you're not too bright, you don't know how to get out of the rain, that it certainly wasn't my idea, that you're ready to lose all your money because you're not too bright, and I didn't try to talk you into it. I mean, I'm kidding with all the phraseology, but basically you're going to sign a piece of paper that says you know you're crazy because it's high risk. Now, that doesn't mean that I talk people out of it. I just say, hey, look, if it was me, you're 10 cents a share. Now, if it goes to a buck, that's a home run, you know, and if you had 1,000 shares times for 10 cents and all of a sudden it's worth 100, you could hit a home run. But normally the young people that I talk to that are doing this, it's $500, $1,000. It isn't all of the money they've got.
Well, that's the point, Joe. I was going to make about... It all depends on the person.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to put all in on a speculative thing, and then basically, you know, you're a gambler.
You're a gambler.
You're not an investor. You're a gambler.
But a lot of young people say, hey, Joe, all I've got is $5,000 to my name, but I want to invest it. I don't want to put it in the bank, and I want to take risk because $5,000 is never going to make me rich, so I want to risk it. And I said, okay, fine. I've never had anybody put $5,000 into penny stocks, by the way. As much as I my counseling thing is to say, literally, look at this piece of paper and it says here, you're crazy. Now I'm paraphrasing, but it says you're taking high.
You're crazy. Sign here.
You sign here. Admit you're crazy. But it means you know it's high risk. Otherwise, they won't accept your money.
That's right.
They won't let you do the trade.
Because you know what happens?
They get sued,
yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, hey. I lost my money. Well, you didn't tell me it was that dangerous.
Yeah.
It was that speculative.
Well, you know,
it's your job. You're supposed to stop me when I'm crazy.
Yeah, right. I've had clients say, hey, wait a minute. Why didn't you make me put more money into that's done so well? I said, you say what?
Yeah.
It's my fault you didn't put enough in because it made too much money.
Right. And if they lost money, it's your fault.
It's all my
preventing
fault.
Them from investing in making, that crazy thing.
So the key is what I try to do is educate people, no matter who they are, whether they're young, old, or in between. But normally when a person is not too young, the older they get, the more conservative they get. And they're going to ask questions. I had a client of mine who's died now, and he was an extremely intelligent guy. He had like 8 or 10 or 11 aeronautical patents. Just brilliant aeronautical engineer. He ended up he was working for Pratt & Whitney. He got one of the biggest pensions I've ever heard because they took some of this, all of these patents, and they vested a portion of the profits on these patents with him. So, I mean, he ended up well. But when I talked investments, he glazed over. Mm. Nothing went in. It just didn't go in. So I remember sitting with him one day, and he says, well, Joe, you know, I trust you. And I says, well, thank God you can, Bob, because you don't know what you're doing. And no matter what I said and how I said it, and I've said this 100 times to clients, they call me up and say, hey, Joe, tell me what you told me 6 months ago that I forgot.
Oh.
You know, because it's something that
you have to tell them, I forgot what I told you.
Well, point is, literally no, because in the file, I've got exactly what we did and when we did it. So we've got,
I'm being summoned.
You got another clause in the Bible?
It's
that
not
you got a name? 1-888-221-8990. So, my job is to educate. Everybody in this group's job is to educate people, to help you make good decisions, and to help your families make good decisions, and to kind of try to protect you from making bad decisions. The other subject we got into today, and I've had this happen numerous times, clients would say, I want to put my daughter on my house, on the deed. And I said, well, why do you want to do that? So, well, that way when I die, it's her house. I said, we got two problems.
I'll let him talk to you.
Who's that? What?
No, it's a caller that called in, didn't give their name or identify themselves, wanted to know why we were talking about medical marijuana when it's sinful and we shouldn't even be talking about medical marijuana.
Well, you know, and there's a part of thinking about this. Now, medicine, mm-hmm. is that sinful?
Not that I know of.
Pastor Dave?
If taken properly.
What I'm trying to say is medical marijuana is not the stuff people are smoking on the street and the drug dealers are doing. They do some, I don't know how they treat it, but as far as the federal government is concerned, this is medicine, and it is used for certain medical conditions, and it has to be prescribed in the same rules that a pharmacy is under. The dispensaries for medical marijuana are under the same scrutiny. That's in the state of Florida for sure. So do I see this as an illegal thing? No. Do I see this as sinful? No. I look at it, if a doctor says this person's physical condition can be improved or tolerated better because of this drug, whether it's OxyContin or who knows what, if it's for pain or whatever it might be, I don't care what it is, if it's approved by the federal government and it can be prescribed by a physician, and it can be bought under the same rules as from a pharmacy, I don't have a problem with it. And that's the only things that are available to be traded. You cannot trade recreational marijuana, period, in mm-hmm. any form whatsoever. Even though it's legal in some states, it's not federally legal.
Right, exactly.
Okay, anyway, and I understand people what they're thinking, that there's lots of different things out there that are on the edge, where if you move over this way on the edge, it's against the law and you're breaking the law and this is wrong. If you move over this way, it's not. Okay, how can that happen? Well, let me tell you, when a doctor prescribes and it's under the control of the FDA, there you go. So I have no problem. Now, the last time I ate that 1 pound of medical, no, I'm kidding. No, listen.
No, but the point is medical, and that's what you're focused on.
If it's medical,
it's medical. And it's not recreational. No. It's not doing something. No. You're not doing it just to get high.
And there's nothing. No, and in fact, very often they remove the portion.
They remove those chemicals that makes a person get high.
And I don't understand what it can do and what it can do, but I have heard on TV and off the internet, I've not met anybody physically myself that's taken the stuff, but that it has made a major difference in their life.
Yeah.
Well, if you can
many
get
many times it's for cancer patients, et cetera, terminal cancer.
Yeah.
I've had experience there. My aunt took medical marijuana for 3 years. She died of cancer, and she was pain-free for most of that 3 years because the marijuana helped her.
Right. See,
and it was prescribed by her doctor.
There you go. And I have absolutely no problem with that whatsoever. What was it? Cocaine used to be in Coca-Cola, wasn't it?
Back in the 19th century.
Yes, yeah. That's true.
I mean, that's how it got its name.
Yeah, that's right, Coca.
So what happens is there's all kinds of things that happen in life that are not necessarily good for us, but sometimes people make mistakes. But this medical marijuana thing has come full circle. This has been going on for a long, long time. And hey, if a person can be helped in their pain or help their quality of life, I'm having a hard problem seeing a problem with that.
Okay, we had a caller that just called. They did not want to go on the air, didn't want to give their name. They're from West Palm Beach. And they said if someone received a inheritance gift of $10,000 and that's all they've got, do you have any kind of investment advice? Because they may want to buy a house sometime in the future.
Well, let me just
know what they don't want to go into. Yeah. We know that.
We don't want to go into anything that's long term.
And they've only got $10,000. That's it.
Well, see, now here comes. I would normally tell them no. I'd say put it in the bank because if you're going to go buy a house within the next 6 months or a year, you don't put it in anything.
Conserve the cash.
Put it in because you're going to put that down on a house. Now, I don't care what you invested in, there's going to be commissions, fees, expenses. Somehow or other, because there's no such thing as people working for free. So the concept is this: I've had two clients in my entire career that said, "Joe, I've got a total of $5,000, and I want to give you the whole $5,000, and that's all I've got." And I said, "I don't really want it." And they said, "No. I'm going to leave this. I'm not going to spend it. I'm going to leave it to somebody, and I want to put it into something that has a chance. But if I lose every dime of it, it's okay." Now, I'm going to have them sign a document that says that they agree with him.
Because I don't know if that's suitable in that case.
Well, here's what happened. Literally, this one particular person, old guy, this was back during the height of the recession when Ford Motor Company was down to $1.80 a share. I said, well, here's my personal opinion. I think Ford's not going to go out of business. They're not taking government money. If I was going to take that and want to risk it and say I can afford to lose it all and I'm willing to lose it all, then maybe I can win, that's what I would do. Well, he sold it at $16 a share. Went from $1.80 to $16. That's called a home run.
Oh, home run.
But, you that's know, that cool. doesn't happen every day. But his whole concept was he was living fine on his Social Security and his pension. This was his money that he didn't want.
So it wasn't really going into the casino, but it was sort of the same mentality. I'm going in, if I can do it, I do it. If I lose it, I lose it.
That's it.
And that's it.
Now, that's not necessarily the best attitude, but guess what? That was what he wanted. He did it with his eyes wide open.
Yeah.
Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Yes, hi. I'm looking forward to buy a house, and I contacted a mortgage company, and they said that because my credit score was low, and of course I have to, you know, pay my student loan and other debts that I have that's reported on my credit, and they recommended that I should get a credit card, use it for about 4 to 5 months to boost up my credit. Do you think it's a wise thing to do?
Well, you see, there's not a bit. What happened? They may have given you the right advice. Now, I can't give you a quick answer. Mike Paulus, our mortgage guy, is not here today, but here is exactly, these people might be telling you the right thing. They're trying to improve your credit score. Do you remember what your credit score was when you went in? Did they tell you what the number was?
It was 542, and they said at least 580 would be good.
Yes. Okay, so what happens, you've got a six-month period of time to increase your credit score, and getting the credit card may do it. Now, I am not the person to tell you this. Mike Paulus, our mortgage guy, would probably agree with whoever you talk to, even if you got a secured credit card, and then you make payments every month and you pay it off every month, it's going to increase your score. And then at the end of 4, 5, or 6 months, you run your score again. And I think that might be the right thing to do. It makes sense to me.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Uh-huh, bye.
God bless you.
Well, you know, think about this. And that is what Mike normally would do, was counsel somebody when they have, but you've got to get it up to about 580 to qualify for a mortgage. And if you've had these problems in the past, but now you're working your way out of them, he's given her a way to do it. So we're running out of time. I don't think we have time for another call. But if you don't get on the radio today and you do want to talk to us, you can call the station anytime, 1-888-221-8990, 1-888-221-8990. They'll take your name and number, and we will call you and help you any way we can. And I think we're down to 30 or 20 or 19 seconds. We're winding down. Vince Rossino, say goodbye.
Say goodbye. Goodbye, everybody. God bless you all.
Alan Love, say goodbye.
Arrivederci.
Arrivederci. Pastor Dave, say goodbye.
Auf Wiedersehen.
And until next week, thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Team Martek program. The Team Martek program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF Martek. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Paulus with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS number 353429. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team Martek program here on WCNO 89.9 FM. For more information, Team Martek is available at 772-678-7725.
Beneath the cross of Jesus, Lord, I would spend my days in the shadow of the one who may I not become familiar with its marvelous